Hi, my name is Jennifer Marsman, and I am live at Build 2016. And with me, I have Bill Wagner.
Hey, Jennifer.
Hey! Now, Bill Wagner has been a C# MVP for many, many years now, and he's really excited about some of the new features that are coming in C# 7.
So probably the most awesome thing right now is C# 7, because they've open-sourced everything. It's on GitHub. It's the Roslyn repo on GitHub. All the language design notes are on GitHub, including comment streams and discussions from anybody in the community. So if you're really passionate about what the language does, you know, dive in and talk about it and talk directly with the team members. You know, they'll go back into the room, have their next design session, and discuss all the feedback that's coming directly from the community on GitHub. So it's a great way to participate and really have a very real say in what's going to happen in the C# language and what scenarios you need to support and what features you like, what things, oh, I don't know about this one, you know, that kind of thing. So
that
it's really, really cool.
That is really awesome. I love the fact that there is, the issue tracking and all of that stuff as well. Mm-hmm. So you have, can really have to see what's top of mind, what are people looking at,
and what bugs are we tracking? Right, and to find the language design notes, if you just search on the issues, there's going to be an issue tag for language design notes, and that'll be the language design, and there's one for C#, one for VB. They're mostly combined, but you can get a really good feel for what's coming.
Very cool, cool. Now, what are some of the things on the docket for C# 7?
So there's a few really big themes.
Okay.
So the first one they've described is going gently but boldly toward a more data-oriented programming style.
Okay. Gently but boldly.
Right. Second one is a few performance features.
Okay.
Primarily targeting game developers. The general community might not look at some of these as much. And then a few really clean up, small but really useful features.
Okay.
And then maybe setting up and thinking about some very interesting metaprogramming ideas.
Okay.
So let's start with this boldly but gently going toward data.
Okay.
If you think of when C# was designed, you know, 1999, 98, launched around 2000, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were building desktop applications, maybe client-server applications.
Yep.
Object-oriented was all the rage, right?
Yeah.
So you have your data, we have the code that manipulates that, and we put them together, right? Think about the programs we're writing now. Okay, we're doing a lot of microservices, we're doing things distributed across different services in the cloud, reaching clients. We're now sending data back and forth between different machines and different processes. And the code doesn't necessarily live with the data,
mm-hmm.
right? And if you look at an object-oriented language, the syntax we have to describe that is, well, it's a class. It's a class that just probably doesn't have any methods. Maybe it's immutable. That syntax is kind of painful to say, I just have a type that's got about 3 or 4 properties, right? So introducing things like tuples, right, which have names, right? There's a tuple struct in .NET. You know, but it's the names of the different fields are, I think, member 1, member 2, member 3, and so on. That really doesn't carry any information for us as a developer. So instead, I want to make a tuple type, and if it's a person, well, the property should be first name, last name, and age, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever I happen to be using for my type. And now I've got semantic meaning along with tuples. Well, how about record types? So let's even compress that a little more and say I want to do class, person, and I just put open parens, and inside there I put the types and all the properties. Open paren, first name, string, last name, string, age, int. Boom. And I don't even have to just find the body of a class. Now I've got this very, very lightweight way to describe this is a public type. It's going to have public getters,
mm-hmm.
read-only properties, and it'll create a constructor that initializes all the properties. Awesome.
Right. Very cool.
So
Very
really cool. nice lightweight syntax.
Mm-hmm.
And then that bleeds into this idea of pattern matching. Okay,
yes.
So we can think of the typical case statement in C# today, and we can match on the value of some variable. Maybe it's a number, maybe it's a string,
mm-hmm.
maybe it's an enum.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's expand that and have cases where I can do almost any expression. Okay, let's say this is a person who's age is greater than 25.
Okay.
Right. So I can match on that kind of a pattern expression. Maybe I derive a student from a person. I can match on a student or a student that has a high GPA because I'm one of the honor students. I can write these expressions to be able to write this case statement that says, look through this thing,
mm-hmm.
this object, look at some of its properties, and let's do some matching on it. And I can also deconstruct it at that time. Maybe I only want to work with the ages and find the average age, right?
Okay.
So if O is person, I just deconstruct and take the age out, and then inside there I just have the number. I don't have the whole object. So I can really write some very concise types of things for pattern matching.
That's great.
So it gets almost F-sharp like, if you will, in some ways. Although the syntax is going to look and feel C-sharp like.
That's good. Okay?
And then in the small but useful, one of my favorites is async enumerables.
Okay.
Okay, so if you think of writing a method that, say, maybe it's going to read lines from a file and produce them as an enumerable one line at a time, okay? So every time you go and read one line from a file, that's an async method. Well, the way stuff is constructed right now, I can't write that as an iterator method unless I block for it, wait for it to come back, and then here's the next line, okay? Well, suppose I can make an enumerable of task of string, and now you can await the get next for the next enumerable, right? So now I have this source of data that I'm going to be looking at that will generate it after doing some async work, and I can now program with that by combining this iterator kind of method along with this async and await kind of state machine. It's really, really natural, really, really cool.
Yes.
That's some interesting bits. And I mentioned some of the performance things.
Yes.
So where that hits mostly game developers is the two features are slices.
Okay.
So let's say I have this great big array, maybe it's my map of the universe, and I want to look at one slice out of it.
Okay.
And I know I'm going to look at it read-only. I'm, say, maybe updating my view of the universe. I can pull out this one slice and not copy that memory, but I can do it as a reference, just from a slice of the array. And then I just have this one bit, and that's all that goes into my sub method. I can also do something which is like a ref local. So again, primarily for games, I am going to pass in an argument by reference and return something else by reference. Okay, because I know maybe it's not going to get modified, or I know I don't want to handle the copying of different value types. I want to pass this in by ref, pull it back out. And what the compiler will do is keep track of, well, what is the lifetime of this thing you're passing as a reference? So it will know, okay, if I'm going to return this thing by ref, well, it can't be, you know, a local variable because it's out of scope, and do things like that. And it'll track that up and down the stack. And again, that's primarily for game developers. I'm not sure we'll see that a whole lot, or other high performance computing kind of constructs.
Well, it makes a lot of sense to have that passing by reference just to make it a lot speedier there.
Right.
What does the syntax look like for that?
It just basically has ref, and you can put ref both on arguments, ref both on local variables.
Okay.
Ref on return types.
Okay.
On return values.
Okay. Very cool.
Another one that's really interesting but controversial, and I don't think we can go over this really just by talking with hands.
Yes.
So I really encourage you to look at this feature on GitHub.
Yes.
Is the idea of non-nullable types.
Right? Okay.
So you know we have reference types.
Yes.
If they're null, you try to access it throws a null reference exception.
Right.
Right. We have value types, which can never be null. And then we introduce nullable value types, which is, okay, this is a number unless it's missing, in which case it's null. So let's suppose we could go back in time and say, for any reference type, I can say, this value will never be null, right? So if I'm passing strings around, nope, it's never going to be null, okay? Now, this was a really hard problem, and at first, even the team was going, I don't know if we can do this because we can't guarantee it. It's just going to break all this code. It's going to do all kinds of things. Well, they came up with a design, and this is where you really need to read this and read the full design. They came up with a design that says, okay, so if you opt into this, we're going to say that any reference type is non-nullable unless you annotate it to say, well, this might be null, okay? And then the compiler will do some analysis in terms of how you access variables. Did you initialize it? Is it passed in and not null, and so on? And if you try to call that method and say, oh, I'm going to pass it a null string, no, that's going to suddenly be a compiler error because this thing says, no, this is non-nullable. And it starts to flow through, and you can start to add it into your code and start to get this, okay, these types, these reference types really are never going to be null, okay? And the compiler will do a lot of the checking for you, and you can slowly start to add that into your app, right? Which ideally means, you know, null reference exceptions don't happen anymore, right?
So, yay!
And the compiler will find that. So that's a really interesting and fun feature. But
that is interesting.
And almost impossible to really describe the whole design well in a couple minutes.
Yeah.
But definitely look at the repo on GitHub.
I believe
there are... We're at build.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's here. There's a build that's out that you'll be able to get at by the time this is online.
All right.
Right. So there will be some things to try some of these features. I don't know if the nullable strings is in that build yet. You will get to try record types.
Great.
Are there? I can't remember
That's
what else
great.
Is in that build.
Yeah.
But I think we can add that to the show notes when the formula goes up a little later.
That'll be great.
And then, those are most of the big
ones. Yeah.
No,
I think
I'm missing something. But
yes.
Think of it later.
Yeah. But no, there is so many cool things. And I love the fact that you can take even just something as simple as tuples and be able to really easily return data, like throw together a solid structure that semantically makes sense and be able to return it very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And the optimization for game developers and grabbing a slice out of the world.
Right.
Sounds like there's a lot of cool stuff coming.
It is cool. There's some really neat things going on.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. All right. And if people want to follow your journey with C#, where should they go?
Follow me on Twitter at Bill Wagner.
All right.
Blog is thebillwagner.com/blog. I'll be writing things about all the new features in C# as they come alive, adding some demos and things there, and have a lot of fun.
That sounds great.
Right.
All right. And then finally, let's have that GitHub link one more time if we want to follow C# and contribute it to ourselves.
GitHub.com/.net/Roslyn.
All right. Thank you so much for your time, Bill. Thank you. Signing off from Build 2016.